And that guy's gonna dance. Hit it.
Howdy, folks. Please keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the train and remain seated at all times.
Oh, it's a jolly holiday for Mary.
Now approaching Tomorrowland Interplanetary Convention Center.
Now don't go away, because we have some very special entertainment to follow.
WDW Radio. Your information.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to the WDW Radio Show, your Walt Disney World information station. I am your host, Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 541, and I'm here once again not only to help you have the best vacation experience when you go to the parks or Disney Cruise Line, but I'm also here to bring you a little bit of Disney magic wherever you are, not just with the podcast, but with my live videos every Wednesday night on Facebook, books, audio tours, special events, and more. You can find everything over at www.radio.com and be part of the community and conversation over on Facebook by going to www.radio.com/community. I am so excited to be joined this week by my friend and fellow Disney and Marvel geek, Brian Crosby. Today, he is the creative director for Marvel-themed entertainment, and he's going to share his story back from when he was a comic-loving kid with a dream and how it led him to his roles as a Disney artist and helping to launch the Disney Kingdom's line of comic books and the many projects he worked on at Walt Disney Imagineering. Brian's going to share how he came to work for Marvel and his current role in the Marvel universe. We're also going to talk about some of the many projects he and others at Marvel are working on, such as stage shows, walkthrough attractions, exhibits, at sea on the Disney Cruise Line, attractions in Disneyland, Walt Disney World, and Hong Kong, as well as what the future holds for Marvel in the Disney theme parks around the world. Our Nerd Fest is then going to continue as we also talk about some of the characters in the Marvel Universe and their future roles in the parks, including Spider-Man, the Avengers, Captain Marvel, and maybe what the Fox acquisition just might bring going forward. I'll then have the answer to our last Walt Disney World trivia question of the week and pose, I can't even call it a challenge, it's going to be the easiest way for your chance to win a Disney Marvel Day at Sea prize package. Then stay tuned to the end of the show. I'll have more information about upcoming WDW Radio events, our next meet of the month in February, your voicemails, and more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. I've said for years that it's such a good time to be a Disney fan, and in that same vein, I believe now more than ever, it is an amazing, pun intended, time to be a Marvel fan with everything that's happening in the MCU, in the parks, the future of the Disney and Fox deal and all the characters that it's going to be. And this week, literally like within 24 hours from when we're recording this, I experienced something in the Marvel Universe that I have never done before and is one of the most truly spectacular things, and that was Marvel Day at Sea. I will have, or you've already heard, a full review of just what this exceptional cruise on the Disney Magic entailed, but part of what made it exceptional was one of the experiences that we had with someone who is one of the smartest, most talented, I think I can call you a friend at this point, and a friend. He is Brian Crosby, the creative director, is that right, of Marvel-themed entertainment. Brian, it's so good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, good to be back, man. I know we've chatted many times, Lou, and it's awesome to talk with you again.
And I was trying to think beforehand, you know, sort of as we get to your background, how you and I first connected.
Gosh,
was it at Expo or was it?
It might have been the D23 Expo. I honestly don't remember. I know we've talked at every.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and maybe it was even before you were, maybe when you were still at WDI.
Imagineering, yeah. Because I was at Imagineering from 2005 to 2015. So I think sometime in there we may have interacted. Yeah.
We'll figure it out. So let's sort of before we sort of talk about what you do now, let's talk about how you got there, and you know, you can go as far back to, you know, Brian Crosby, the little kid with a crayon and a dream, all the way up to how you got here today.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, I it was kind of that. I mean, I grew up in Southern California, big fan of comic books, of Disneyland, all those things. So, you know, that stuff was always kind of in my DNA. You know, I told a story about how when I would go to Disneyland, my parents were taking me once a year, and I had this Pirates of the Caribbean book. You probably know exactly what I'm talking about. You open up the front cover, and it had the full map of the attraction. I remember just tracing that with my finger and imagining the things that I was going to see that day, even though I'd been on the ride a million times. I was fortunate enough to one day turn kind of those passions into a career. And so in 2005, I started working at Walt Disney Imagineering, and I was an intern initially in the art library.
Wait, you can't just say I started working at an Imagineering. Hey, I mean, there's a story. Just shut up and say, don't you know who I am? You know, how do you get there? Because I remember, I know the story, but I remember sort of some of the things that Imagineering was doing to find talent like you.
Yeah, there was a competition called Imaginations, and this is it's an annual competition that Imagineering does to find kind of new, diverse talent from all over the world. And a friend of mine, I was actually working as a security guard at night and going to school during the day. I had a young family, had two kids, and a buddy of mine that I'd known for a long time gave me a call and said, hey, I heard about this competition that Imagineering is doing. Do you want to enter? I'm like, sure. You know, I know what Imagineering is. I was familiar with it, you know. I never thought in a million years it would turn into a career. So we entered. We actually came up with an idea for an attraction based on The Rocketeer. Because we both just loved that film. And I did the storyboards for the attraction, but I made it look like a 1930s comic book. And we submitted this into Imagineering, and they liked it. They brought us in. They interviewed us. And it turned into an internship. And so that internship, I was working in the art library and getting to know all the artists working at that time and getting to show them my artwork and getting lots of feedback and things like that. And I was able to make enough contacts that I turned that into a full-time job. And so then I worked in visual imaging production at Imagineering, which basically what that means is I was putting together presentations for people. So again, not super glamorous, but my foot was in the door. But I really wanted to be a designer. And so I just kept working at it. I'd be there all night working on new ideas. Anything and everything I could do to show what I was capable of doing, and doing lots of design and artwork and storyboards and just anything, pitching new ideas. In fact, there's a room, at least there used to be. There's a room in Imagineering that had the kind of the 10-year plan for each park, and I would go in there during the day and look at all the stuff that was coming up like 5, 6, 7 years out that probably nobody was really thinking about yet. And then I'd go to the portfolio executive over that park and go, hey, notice you got a D-ticket ride coming in 2013. Have you given it any thought? And they oftentimes would say no. And I'd go back and start working on stuff. And that was how I kind of proved myself, just kind of taking initiative. So even once I got in the door at Imagineering, that was just the beginning of really the work and really trying to prove myself. Because, I mean, you've talked to probably many Imagineers over the years, Lou, and you know that people don't generally leave if they don't have to. And so people have been there, you know, guys like Tony Baxter and Joe Rohde, and these guys have been there for decades. And so that's, as a new young artist, that's a little bit intimidating. How do I get my foot in the door? How do I become an artist that the project managers would rely on?
Just as a quick aside,
sorry.
That room that you're talking about,
yeah,
all of us mentally are freaking out because that's the room that we wanted the key to walk inside and take a look around it.
As a fan,
yeah,
absolutely, that's the room you want to be in. And as a fan, because I'm a fan myself, and you know, I would geek out just being in that room and seeing the stuff that was coming up. So, it was a pretty cool place to be. But yeah, so that's kind of how I got into Imagineering. Eventually, after about a year and a half, I got that gig as a concept designer.
And what were some of the early things that you started working on, you know, theme park wise?
The very first thing I worked on was Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage for Disneyland. And I kind of came into that project late. I was working on the model, just doing some paintings and things like, or painting the model. And then worked on It's a Small World for Hong Kong. I worked on a lot of blue sky projects. Some that, you know, that never saw the light of day, some that have. Worked on Tron Light Cycles. What's it called? Light Cycle Run? Light Cycle Power Run? Something like that. Sorry. It's been a while.
It's called the really awesome Tron attraction. Yeah. Again, awesome Walt Disney World people, if you're not drooling yet, you know, we've talked. I've ridden it before overseas, and it is going to be a game changer when it comes to Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, I'm excited for everybody to get to experience it here in the States because it is a lot of fun. I mean, the vehicles and the music, like, get you 75% of the way there. I mean, it's just awesome to be in that vehicle. I did some of the storyboarding for that attraction. Worked on Star Wars quite a bit. I was involved in Star Wars projects for about 3 years, working on what would later become Galaxy's Edge. But when I was working on it, this was before the new films kind of started to take shape, so we didn't really know anything about them. So words like Kylo Ren and Rey and the Resistance, those were not words that we even knew. So we were just basing it off of what we knew at the time. But really, I kind of found my bread and butter working on Marvel projects because, you know, like I said, grew up as a kid reading comics and huge fan of comic books and animation. And then, you know, we all love the Marvel films as well. So, you know, when Disney bought Marvel, it really hit a sweet spot for me.
Yeah, I could imagine. And I remember going back to D23 Expo, I remember sort of it was right after the announcement had happened. It's when I first met Kevin Feige, and you've heard the interview with me and Kevin, my embarrassing story about how I didn't even know who he was when he came over, but how for those of us who grew up on comic books or Saturday morning, you know, Spider-Man cartoons or whatever it was, how that ushered in not just a whole new level of excitement, but opportunity for some of the stuff that we're going to see. So bring me back to the Marvel deal happens, again, from a fan perspective, that came out of nowhere. Nobody heard word one about it. Tell me from an Imagineering perspective how that starts to change in terms of what you guys can do and how you transition from Imagineering over to Marvel.
Yeah, so I remember when I opened up my computer that morning in 2009, and I don't remember the date exactly, but it was like Christmas morning. Like, I honestly could not believe what I was seeing. It was, you know, I was at WDI, opened up my computer, and there it was, the Disney logo and the Marvel logo together, and I couldn't even comprehend it. I was so excited at what that could mean for us. Like, I didn't even understand. I'm like, what does this mean? Like, what are we going to get to do? Like, this is just awesome. And Imagineering, there was kind of this buzz happening about what Marvel was. Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2 and The Incredible Hulk had come out. So three films already were really kind of, you know, staking that starting to begin what would become the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So we brought in the author of the Marvel Encyclopedia, that giant, you know, tome of a book, to come and speak to the Imagineers. And so we all gathered together in this giant presentation room at WDI, and, you know, all 1,400 of us or whatever packed into this room. I was, like, in the front row, so excited for this. And this guy gets up and starts speaking about the Marvel Universe, kind of doing a Marvel 101, and, you know, he's deep cuts, right? Like, I mean, not deep cuts if you're a Marvel comic book fan, but you know, it was like the Dark Phoenix saga and things like that. And I'm just right there with him. I'm following every word. I'm loving it. And I distinctly remember turning around to see if the other Imagineers were as excited as I was, and they were not. And the room started to get deflated. I think people started to check out and feel like the Marvel Universe is too big. It's too nerdy. I don't know what this is. And I think most kind of disconnected. And at first,
because it was also, it's before comics and the movie's got to be cool again. You know, all of a sudden, you know, being a comic fan is the new black.
Exactly, exactly. Like Iron Man was a huge hit, but most people, I mean, now Tony Stark is part of our, like, it's part of the zeitgeist. Everybody, my grandmother can tell you who Tony Stark is. But in 2007, before the movie comes out, in 2008, you know, most people didn't really know who Tony Stark was, let alone Thor and Asgard and, you know, Captain America. Like, most people couldn't even articulate who these characters were. They might know the iconography or have seen them, but they didn't really know them. So outside of, like, Spider-Man, like, the X-Men, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and the Hulk, that was, like, superheroes, right? But to us comic book fans...
It was superheroes... It's for kids. It was something for kids. Yeah, it wasn't really for adults.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, I was initially disappointed that Imagineering wasn't as generally as excited as I was. But that's when the light went off in my head that this is an opportunity for me as something that I'm passionate about, something I know, something I understand. In fact, I had... Working as a concept designer at WDI, I was told frequently that my style was a little too comic booky. And so I wasn't having a lot of work, getting a lot of work at certain points. And so this was perfect, like perfect for me. So I just started working on anything and everything Marvel I could come up with. You know, as small as a churro cart, as big as a full park, like anything I could come up with. Just throwing anything at the wall, hoping things would stick. Coming up with philosophies of how Marvel could be integrated into the parks. I just made that my mission to really... own it, and so I was pretty much put on just about every Marvel project that was happening in WDI, whether I forced myself into it or was asked to be a part of it, you know, eventually that led to us doing some early attractions like the Iron Man experience.
So I want to back up just a little bit, because your connection to comic books goes beyond little Brian Crosby going to the corner store to buy comic books, and because you helped to create, were very much a part of the team that created the Disney Kingdoms line of comic books going back, is it 2013, somewhere around
there? Yeah, I couldn't tell you dates. Dates are rough for me, but yeah, we you know, comics is, you know, I'm the kind of guy that's, I'm still at the comic book store every Wednesday getting my books, you know, and I read my Marvel comics every week. So comics are definitely a part of my DNA. In fact, before I became an Imagineer, that's what I really wanted to be. I wanted to be a comic book artist. And I was that. I worked on some small press comics for a few years. Didn't make much money, so it was really hard. But so I went back to school and, you know, studied some other things to try and kind of broaden my portfolio. But comics was really my first love. And so when Disney did buy Marvel... like I said, we had already started a lot of talk about what Disney could do with the Marvel brand, but nobody was asking the question in reverse. Like, what could Marvel do with the Disney brand? And so Marvel really being, the house of ideas for, you know, in terms of comic book publishing, you know, dawned on us, hey, what if we made Marvel comics but used Disney attractions as kind of the basis for those stories. And so we looked at things like Pirates of the Caribbean and what it became as a film, where you kind of, if you look at the movies, you know, you do a deeper dive into who the, you know, what those worlds are, what those environments are, create new characters like Jack Sparrow and whatnot, and you get to create this new mythology with touch points back to the attraction. And we thought we could do the same thing, maybe not with a big budget movie, but we could do it in a comic book. And so that was the pitch. So we took it to Tom Staggs, and said, this is what we want to do. And he's like, I think it's a great idea. Yeah, let's do it. You know, what do we have to lose? Nothing. And so for, you know, pretty minimal investment comparatively to doing a big budget film or an attraction, it was an easy way to, you know, kind of broaden these stories, create new characters, and kind of get something more out of the attractions IP, if you will, the intellectual property of them. So Secrets of the Weird was the first, based off of the Museum of the Weird, which I'm sure your listeners know that story very well.
Yeah, and if you've never seen or read any of these comics, you should go back, because in addition to that, there was Big Thunder Mountain, Haunted Mansion and Enchanted Tiki Room, and I think one of the ones that got a lot of people very excited was the Figment series of comics. You talk about an iconic character, one that is beloved not by, you know, the nostalgics, but the Figment presence and what Dreamfinder was and what he is in the comics, I think got a lot of people very, very excited to be able to have additional stories with that character.
Yeah, in fact, that story, we did two editions of it, two mini-series of Figment. If you read them, they're really more Dreamfinder stories. Figment's a big part of it, obviously. You get to see the origins of, you know, how Dreamfinder comes up with Figment in the context of that narrative. But it really is, it's the origin story of Dreamfinder, which was a lot of fun to kind of dive in.
And I remember reading, and I believe the quote was attributed to you, and I, if whether it was or wasn't, I dug the idea that those comic book stories could lead to something that could be adapted to TV or films or something, depending on how well they would be received by the comic book readers themselves.
Well, that was our hidden agenda. because we didn't have a lot of say over what kind of comics Marvel was going to make, but because, you know, I was in the attractions business, you know, I was an Imagineer, and so we had wanted to make create the Museum of the Weird for real. You know, so there was a small kind of group of us Imagineers that were really passionate about the story of Museum of the Weird. Went and spoke with Rolly Crump, you know, in creating the comic book, and went to his house and sat with him and talked, kind of picked his brain about the Museum of the Weird and that whole idea. And I lost my train of thought. But anyway, what was I talking about?
So the secrets of the weird and how the comics could potentially translate
else. Sorry. So yeah, so
we're recording this at midnight, by the way, after a 5-day cruise.
I know. I apologize. So we thought if we could turn this into a franchise, you know, whether, you know, maybe the comic book becomes really popular, and then maybe they make a movie of that thing, and then it would be a lot easier to convince people to make the Museum of the Weird into an attraction. So that was kind of our hidden agenda, and didn't quite play out that way. You know, it's still kind of one of the attractions I'd love to do at some point, but nevertheless, we got to make a great line of comic books that we're, you know, really happy with.
Yeah, and they're beautiful too. And I think they're available like in the hardback, editions as well too. So you can still find them. So the Marvel deal goes through. They're like, all right, Brian's the big nerd. All right, Brian, how does it start to say, okay, we have access to most of, 9,000 or so characters? How do they say, okay, how do we start to leverage these characters and bring them to life beyond the screen but into theme park experiences?
Well, it was hard because we, you know, I mentioned earlier that we had to come up with some philosophy as to how you would go about doing that. The Marvel characters, what makes them so relatable is that they, in large part, take place in our world, in the here and now. You know, Peter Parker could very well go to Disneyland. In fact, I believe there's an issue from like 1986 where he and Mary Jane actually do go to Disneyland, and they ride an early version of Splash Mountain before it was Splash Mountain even existed.
What?
It's a log flume ride that they go on, and it's weird because it looks nothing like Disneyland in the book, because it's got like a chain link fence that you see like around it.
It's like Bizarro Disneyland.
It's totally Bizarro. Yeah, totally Bizarro Disneyland. But anyways, they're on this log flume ride, so you're like, whoever was writing, drawing this at the time, like, had not done their homework, right? So it cracked me up. But they were supposed to be at Disneyland, and you see them go to the castle and everything. And I found this book, and I was like, see, Peter Parker could go here. So that immediately changes how we would tackle this. Tony Stark can go to a Yankee game. They can do the things that we do, and so that immediately changed the way we had to think about this. Because, I mean, you know, I always tell the story that, you know, as you guys know, when you walk into Disneyland, you walk through that tunnel, and here you leave today and enter the worlds of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy. But in the Marvel universe, that's today. So this is the opposite of everything that we try to do at Disney, right? So with the Iron Man experience, that became our first attraction that we were really going to tackle. We said, Tony Stark probably knows he's here. He knows he's at Hong Kong Disneyland. And so what does that mean? And why would he choose this place? And fortunately, Iron Man 2 had come out, and the Stark Expo, the notion of the Stark Expo was introduced. And that became a great kind of story hook for us to say, well, that could be a pseudo, quote-unquote, temporary thing that Tony Stark would bring the Stark Expo to Hong Kong Disneyland. And in our attraction, in a very Mission to Mars-like way, we're going to fly up and out over the attraction, which I loved Mission to Mars as a kid. And when you pulled up and you saw Disneyland as you were flying backwards, I always thought that was cool, and it added to the believability of it. And so that's where we got the inspiration for that.
And I remember riding that attraction and coming to my
Mission to Mars or Iron Man experience?
Well, Mission to Mars and Flight to the Moon, you know, in the early Flight to the Moon. But when I was in Hong Kong, I'm like, this is so different because they're acknowledging where they are, which no other attraction other than maybe Stitch's Great Escape really did. And it was sort of, it was a very different way to approach it. And again, being the Marvel fan and being able to walk through things that you saw referenced in the films, and it was the queue itself was like a little treasure hunt trying to find some of those things. And I'm like, I walked out wowed, not by the attraction in and of itself, and obviously the wonderful gift shop that followed, but the possibilities of what that was going to open up going forward.
Yeah, and one of the hallmarks of any of the Marvel Universe, and you know, now the general public is very well aware of the connectivity of it all. You know, through the Marvel Studios films, that's kind of made broader awareness of what is the Marvel Universe. That all these stories are connected. You know, Stan and Jack and Steve Ditko and all those early creators did with the Marvel Universe. They interwove all these ideas. So we thought, hey, with our attractions, these should all be connected in some way. So each of our attractions up to this point, and probably moving forward, there are Easter eggs to other pieces of Marvel attractions that are around the world. And so, I mean, even if you go on the Iron Man experience, you will see an Easter egg in there. There's a Daily Bugle newspaper in one of the clips that's showcasing the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout attraction. It says Breakout, and it's got a picture of the Collector's Fortress on it. So it's connected. And then if you go to Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, it's hidden very well. But there's a Stark Expo, I believe it's a sticker or bumper sticker in one of the lockers or something like that.
Game on. I'm up now. I know what the challenge is.
Yeah, so it's loosely connected. But, I mean, even when you're on the attraction, there's one version where when you go up, Rocket goes, hey, is that Disneyland? So, again, another acknowledgement that it's in our world.
So just a quick question about Hong Kong and opening up the first Marvel attraction overseas. Was there any challenges in terms of an international audience and familiarity with either the comic books or the stories or the characters?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, that attraction, originally, we were working on bringing Star Tours over there. And so I'd done a number of designs on what Star Tours might look like in Hong Kong Disneyland, but we quickly got some feedback that in Hong Kong they weren't super nostalgic or had that level of affinity yet for Star Wars, but they were really digging the Marvel films, but they do know the films first, so less knowledge about the comic books. So with Iron Man experience, our primary concern was that people understood that he was not a robot, but that he was a guy who put on a suit. And so when you go through the queue, we are very deliberate in explaining who Tony Stark is, who Howard Stark is, that Howard was passionate about flight through the hover car, through energy with the arc reactor, and through protection with his involvement in Project Rebirth. And so those things were the three ideas that Howard was really passionate about that we saw in some of those films. And then if you think about those three ideas, protection, energy, and mobility, you combine them all and you kind of get Iron Man. Yeah. Protection, the armor, flight, mobility, he flies, and energy, the RT in his chest. Yeah. And so our story is at the future of Stark Industries. is about sharing those three ideas with the world: protection, energy, and mobility. So the Q tells that Stark Expo narrative about what today's Stark Industries is. And so we are very much talking about Tony and Stark in the Q, and part of that is explaining what the Iron Wing vehicle is and things like that.
Yeah, it, as you say that, it all starts to sort of make sense as I play it back. But that sort of was the first big domino to fall in terms of taking the Marvel experience not just out of the pages of the comic books, but off the screen itself. What's next that after Iron Man in terms of chronology for theme park attractions?
The next attraction after that, we did some smaller things. I don't have the exact chronology in my head, but I know we did some character meet and greets, or heroic encounters as we call them now. But the next big attraction was Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout in Anaheim. And
which, when it was announced, there were some people, if you've been on the Twitter, that were a little concerned about that.
Yeah, I think every version of social media let us know that this was not a super popular decision. But we believed in the story that we had, and we thought that's part of our challenge. That's part of our mandate, is to refresh things, keep them interesting, deliver on something that's as good, if not greater, than what was there before. And that was the challenge that was given to us, was to create something new and turn that into a superhero attraction.
And Guardians is, I thought, was the perfect one, especially for a place like Disneyland, because of all the Marvel films, I think Guardians is the one, first of all, was the most unexpected, because unless you were a huge comic book nerd, you didn't know who those characters were. But it resonated not just with the comic book nostalgics that had read the Guardians comics, but it was one that families, and especially a lot of kids, really sort of latched onto. So I'm like, this is the perfect one to sort of start bringing those experiences into the parks. And I think a lot of those people were very quickly silenced, and you never heard from them again, because the attraction's remarkable. I was a huge Tower fan, but from the first time I rode it by myself and then with other people, people keep saying the same thing. It's a party and an attraction. And there's so much to enjoy, from the nerdy Marvel side to the stuff in the queue to the rewritability factor.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is a testament to James Gunn and what he did, you know, with Star-Lord as a character, with Peter Quill. I think opening up that first film with him as a boy and dealing with his mom's terminal cancer.
I fast forward to that every time.
Sorry. But that, and then using the mixtape that she gives him as the soundtrack for the film, grounded a very bizarre cosmic story in a very human experience. And that is so quintessentially Marvel. It's like, we start with the human first. You put the human in the superhuman. And that gave you that earthbound human connection to Peter Quill. And so
you cared about him from the very beginning.
Yeah. And that was not something that, I mean, Peter Quill, Star-Lord's been in the comics for quite a while. But that element of him was new to, from the film. And I think that really helped people kind of latch on to this story. And so when we were creating the attraction, we knew the music was going to be a hugely important part, because it gives everybody kind of a level playing field. Like, we, there's a lot of nostalgia for some of those songs, 60s, 70s, 80s music. And so we knew that was going to be a big element of this, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's music that, I just unlocked level 50, so it's the music I grew up with. But my kids, especially my son, like, the Spotify playlist is all the music from Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, we sort of listen to that on repeat every time we're in the car. So what else? Because the Marvel experiences are not necessarily limited to theme parks, right? There's been traveling exhibits and shows throughout for a number of years.
Yeah, and so Marvel themed entertainment. We're really the newest division at Marvel, and it's kind of a it's an exciting time, because it's a bit daunting, but it's also a blessing that we have this IP, this set of characters, 8,000 to 9,000, like you mentioned, that have been around for some as long as 80 years now, And we get to now tell stories of those characters in ways that people have never experienced them before. We've read the comics, we've seen the movies, we're now playing the video games. I mean, hello, Spider-Man. Like, oh, who hasn't? We could talk about that all night, right? I mean, the Spider-Man game just really, they crushed it. And so with these attractions, we're trying to deliver on big, epic human stories in the same way that, you know, any other Marvel story would be. And so that's exciting. So, yeah, so we're not just doing that in the Disney theme parks, but doing that with traveling shows like Marvel Universe Live and Avenger Station, which you can go check out in Las Vegas, and the Marvel Experience, which is currently in Thailand. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that we're doing to bring these characters to life. And it's exciting to, you know, see the Marvel brand starting, giving people touch points to the brand all over the world. Because, I mean, unfortunately, not everybody can make it out to a theme park. And who knows how many attractions we actually get to make in a number of years. But these larger Marvel Universe touch points give people access to those characters anytime. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Marvel Universe Live is something that, you know, hopefully I'm going to get a chance to see. It's just never sort of our paths never crossed. But I got to see something that I loved. So this past year we did a group cruise to Alaska. We flew into Seattle first, took the train to Seattle. If you've never done it, you've got to do that cruise. And one of the things I was most excited to go see was the MoPop exhibit. The only thing in that entire museum that we went to was the Marvel exhibit, which Alaska was arguably, and maybe up until this one, the best cruise I ever took. The MoPop exhibit, I could have gone to the MoPop exhibit and gone home. That's how good it was.
Yeah, that was a project we worked on with SC Exhibitions, and it just was a ton of fun. And I think it, if you're a Marvel fan, I mean, you've done it. I think it checks every box. It's got original artwork. It's got props and costumes from the films. So much narrative and story. I mean, you could spend all day just in that exhibit.
That's what we did.
I mean, that museum is phenomenal. Yeah. When I was there for the opening, it was at the tail end of the Star Trek exhibit, which is, even if you're not a Star Trek nerd, like, it's awesome. It was an awesome exhibit.
It was closed when we went, but
it was so good. Yeah. But everything they do there is just great. I mean, I really fell in love with that museum, and I've only been there once, you know, for the Marvel stuff. Yeah, really proud of that exhibit. Unfortunately, it's only going to be in MoPop for just a short time more, but it's not going away. We're taking it to Philadelphia, so it's going to be in the Franklin Institute beginning in like April. Yeah, like first week of April, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's if you have occasion to go see it or are looking for something to do for a day or a weekend, it is absolutely worth the price of admission. And if you're a Marvel fan like us, we didn't go see anything else. You know, with all due respect to everything else in the building, it was incredible to see it and get up close to some of that cool stuff.
Yeah, and we're gonna be continuing to add new things to it as we go. We just added the first step. You know, there's some great photo ops in there. There's one of the Thing, the sleeping Thing, which is a display showcasing the world outside your window. Which, if you interview anybody from Marvel, 9 times out of 10, you're guaranteed at some point they're gonna say Marvel is the world outside your window. Because that's really what it is, right? And so we brought that to life in a very physical way. With you're in the living room of the Fantastic Four, the Thing is asleep, and outside the window is like the world is going to heck in a handbasket. You know, Galactus shows up, Silver Surfer, Thor, Captain Marvel. It's super cool. But so that photo op's been immensely popular, and we've just added a new one with Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan. So we brought her to life in a dimensional way for the first time, and she's got her embiggened fist and all that. So throughout the year, this is going to be a big year for all of us at Marvel with the 80th anniversary, going back to 1939, Marvel Comics number one, and we're going to be doing a lot of events to celebrate that at the Franklin Institute.
That's awesome. We might need to take a special trip up to Philadelphia. My son's eyes just bugged out of his head. But speaking of which, we're talking about it in the theme parks, and we'll touch a little bit about what we know is coming that you can sort of mention. But we're on the Disney Magic, unfortunately, the last day, insert sad face, this is the first sailing for this season of Marvel Day at Sea. This is the very first time I have ever done it before. I'm here in sort of a father-son podcaster and assistant trip. And I will tell you, we have been blown away by what we saw. I came in with no knowledge of what or expectations of what's going on. Can you tell me a little bit about bringing the Marvel experience to see and what is sort of new this season?
Yeah, and this has just been a labor of love because the Disney Cruise Line is amazing. Everybody involved with the cruise line is fantastic. And I mean, that's not me being a homer for Disney Marvel at all. Just everybody involved and the folks from Disney Live Entertainment that we work with on all of the Marvel offerings, they're just top-notch. And super passionate about, I think you got to speak with Tony Giordano and Dan Fields. I mean, two of my favorite people on the planet. They really love the characters and love Marvel, love helping bring them to life. And so it's been a pleasure working with them on all of this stuff. So the Heroes Unite show, spectacular at the end of the night, is not to be missed. It's just been awesome.
I have to stop you because you're the Marvel guy saying, oh, you can't miss the superhero. If I haven't recorded the recap yet, so I don't know when this is going to air in relation to that. Again, Nicholas and I had been enjoying the day full of events. And let me even sort of step back for a second. I had been on other ships where they had Avengers Academy. We've done group cruises where we will take over the kids club at midnight, and I love watching the adults go in doing the Iron Man sort of virtual experience, and we got to meet Spider-Man, you know, last time. Throughout the day, the schedule was packed in a wonderful way with character interactions and shows, and even shows out on deck. The show at night that really is the incredible ice. My son's shaking his head. It blew us away. I'm not saying this because you're sitting here. That was, without question, one of the best stage shows I've seen, not just at sea, but in a theme park as well. It was full of surprises. It played to both kids and adults, to the hardcore Marvel fans and the person who just saw a film for the first time. It was spectacular, amazing. I'll use all the Spider-Man-isms, but it really was.
I'm glad you felt that way because I mean we had so much fun bringing it to life. I think, you know, I'm really proud of the way the stunts are awesome, but the seamless blending of media, of live stunts, of fireworks. It's kind of taking all of our tool of tricks and bringing them all together into one show. So I am super proud of it. And what we've updated this year is we've introduced our brand new character, Captain Marvel. Carol Danvers is now a part of that show. So she makes her very spectacular appearance, might add.
Yeah, spectacular is a good way to put it. And I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. Although I am going to upload it because you have to watch it because it's so good. But there were a number of moments there that were very surprising in a wonderful way. And I've never seen fireworks integrated into a show where what they're doing on stage connects with you. And I'm like, it's so simple, but it's so smart. And it's sort of, it's not like, oh, fireworks after the show. It's fireworks are part of what is happening on the stage in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all the live entertainment team. That was their idea. And I'm just super happy with how it all played out. And of course, Stan does make an appearance in that show. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And it got an appropriate response. I think it got a full applause when Stan showed up. So yeah, it's a great show. And even the Red Skull makes an appearance. So that's the only place you can see the Red Skull throughout the week or throughout the day. Excuse me.
And so that was spoiler alert. That was the thing I didn't. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like I'm trying to focus on watching it and taking it all in and videotaping and then turning around to match eyes with my son because it was that OMG moment, like it's the Red Skull, like it's incredible.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad you dug it. I'm glad you guys liked it.
Like I'm like, okay, I can go home, right? But it was really the perfect way to end the cruise. And what I love about the Marvel Day at Sea is I think you, I assume very intentionally, make sure there's things for smaller kids to do, the middle, the teenagers, the adults, the comic book nerds, and sort of everybody in between. the day was packed, but we didn't, you know, we didn't want it to end at the end of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very well aware of the demographics that we have and people that we want to make sure everybody has a touch point to the Marvel brand, no matter how deep your level of knowledge. In fact, we have one show here on the ship called Marvel Origins that if you're not super familiar with the characters, you can go in there and kind of get a Marvel 101. And our friends over at Marvel.com, Ryan Panagos and Lorraine Sink, do a great job of kind of running down who all of the characters are, at least kind of the core characters. So if you're coming in at zero and you just want to, you know, get familiar with the Marvel characters, it's a great place to do it. And of course, you know, you can see the Marvel films on your room, in your stateroom, or go and watch them here in the theater. I think we were showing Infinity War even at some points, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. So, yeah, it's really, there's just something for everybody, you know, whatever your level of fandom, even all the way down to the diaper dash that is Marvel themed, which, if you don't know what a diaper dash is, it's babies racing. And so we have something that's for everybody. And that's, I mean, we do that at Marvel anyway, whether it's animation or film or comics or video games or theme park attractions. Hopefully there's some touch point to all of these characters. And it speaks to the flexibility and malleability of the Marvel characters. If you think about, let's just take Spider-Man, your guy, right, as a test case. There's a Spider-Man for everyone. There's a Spider, you know, whether it's in film or it's, you know, the Spider-Man animated series on Disney XD, or you're a hardcore gamer and you want to play that Spider-Man game, or you want to go see Spider-Man Homecoming or Far From Home, you know, later this year. There's something for everyone, you know, whatever your level of interest in Spider-Man. And so I think that's really something we're really trying to do. And we have so much more to come with all of those characters. I think people are really going to dig.
Yeah, I'm wiping the drool off my... I mean, even the menu. Like, the food is themed and the drinks are themed. I wanted to take home the menu because it's made like it's a comic book. Like, it was beautiful and it just got me sort of excited about everything. But I think, to your point, it is, you know, it's all connected. We've heard about this for so long. And this really is part of this global, you know, Avengers initiative, as it were. And I have a feeling that what we're seeing now is just very much the tip of the iceberg. That what we saw in Hong Kong was that first domino, was that first step. We now know a little bit about what is coming. We've seen content. I'm getting excited for. We've seen the massive show building go up for Guardians of the Galaxy at Epcot. We understand that the ride technology is going to be different. And I may have actually shed a silent tear when I saw some of the concept art come out for what's coming out to California.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you so much about what's coming. But I will tell you this. A lesson I learned from someone you know very well, one of my mentors, Joe Rohde. He taught me that, and something I had never thought about until he articulated it to me, was that the guest is the protagonist of every attraction story. And after he said it, I was like, you're absolutely right. You know, when you ride Space Mountain, you are the one sitting in the rocket ship. You're the star. You're not watching it unfold on a screen or on a page. You are the star of the story. When you're on Indiana Jones, you're riding in that vehicle. When you're on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, you're riding in that runaway, you know, railroad car. So with a Marvel story and a Marvel attraction, we have to do that, which is different for us. We have to flip the paradigm, because you're no longer watching passively Iron Man save the day up on screen. You have to be there with him. And that goes back to the Iron Man experience, where you are there at the Stark Expo. Iron Man addresses you and makes you a part of the narrative, and you help save the day. In Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, Rocket recruits you, the people, to help liberate the Guardians of the Galaxy from their captivity with the Collector. So what we're doing with these lands moving forward is taking that to an even higher level, and that it's your origin story, it's about you, it's recruitment, and these are going to be places where you're going to get to figure out who you are and what your role is in this whole Marvel universe. So it's exciting.
Yeah, so this idea that there's headquarters and technology sharing exhibits and allow... Look, anybody can be Spider-Man. It's allowing anybody to be a superhero. And obviously, I don't want any spoilers. I mean, I'd love a spoiler, but I don't want any spoilers. But in terms of what we know that's been announced that's coming, just to sort of tie it in a bow for those people who know, because there is a lot that has already been revealed that's coming, not just domestically, but internationally, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a few things that are out there. I think, you know, what has been acknowledged, we haven't named anything yet or acknowledged what the menus are going to be, but these training centers, if you will, there is a connection to Tony Stark, and Tony Stark working with and for the Avengers and kind of creating these places of learning and technology. And there's some other organizations that are going to be a part of that. Certainly PymTech is going to be involved. A new organization called the Worldwide Engineering Brigade is going to be involved. So there is definitely some very cool things that are going to be new and familiar. Plenty of Easter eggs back to the Marvel Universe. There's just going to be a ton there for people to kind of dive in and explore.
I'm happy we're doing this in person so you can see my smile widen as you're talking, because this is what, you know, little 7-year-old, 50-year-old Lou Mangiello always wanted, and all, I think, comic book fans, we want to sort of step into that world and be able to live and breathe and interact with these characters. And going back to...
Yeah, no, that's the challenge, right? Is like, we have to create something that 7-year-old Lou Mangiello will love, and also whatever age you are now, Lou Mangiello, will also love, but also somebody that doesn't necessarily have that same level of familiarity with the Marvel Universe, that they can come in at zero and get the same thing out of it. And I think Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is really doing something unique in creating a completely new planet. It kind of puts everybody on a level playing field, right? So if you create, let's say, Tatooine, for the Star Wars fans, there's a built-in level of expectation of what that means, right? And you come in with certain, like, this hallway has to go a certain way, or it's not right, or you've messed up. But if you create a new planet, nobody knows anything. You're exploring it for the first time, and so for all intents and purposes, that is how it is, right? And so for the Marvel Universe, we need to kind of put ourselves in the same situation, is give everybody the same entry point, so the super fans will certainly be in on it and have a deeper level of knowledge of what's going on, but for those who are just coming in for the first time, they're going to find something there for them too.
And I think that brings, like you said, additional challenges, because like Disney, of paramount importance is things of like character integrity. So you have to sort of be able to balance integrity and consistency across all these platforms and venues, and you as creative director, I assume that's a big part of your role, is it, Spider-Man, for example. Spider-Man exists in many different forms, in many different worlds. How do you sort of ensure that for the guest, they understand, you know, what Spider-Man it is and what world he lives in? How do you sort of balance coordinating, you know, the MCU with the TV and the comics and everything that's going on in these different worlds?
I think we don't get hung up on continuity. If there's something that Marvel Comics has taught us, is that the Marvel Universe has the ability to still be one long narrative, but also refresh itself from time to time. And so in that way, it remains timeless. You know, if we try to really be at a certain point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the Marvel comic book universe, we're actually doing ourselves and everybody else a disservice, because then you're locked into that time frame, right? So I think the more we can be timeless and less timely, the better off we'll be, because these are theme park attractions that may go untouched for 10, 15, 20, 25 years. Who knows how long? They might get updated. You never know. But we've got to give them the longest possible shelf life. So we are not really tapping into one particular continuity. There's certainly going to be a lot of sharings with what's happening with the Marvel Cinematic Universe in terms of leveraging the actors where we can. So I think, you know, we've had the blessing of being able to use them for Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout and for Ant-Man and the Wasp Nano Battle. And, you know, I mean, they're bringing these characters to life in new ways and introducing them to a lot of people. So if we can use them, we absolutely will. But we're trying to not necessarily hook into one point in the timeline. So we have a little bit of flexibility in that way.
So I'm just realizing for some reason that you obviously have to know to a certain degree a lot of what's coming or being planned. So now I'm staring into your eyes, trying to read your mind in terms of what's coming in the MCU and then how you can sort of take those characters and stories. And I think to a large part too, new technology, and bring that into the park. Because I think what has been happening over the last number of years is this continuing trend towards getting away from a passive experience. We don't want to go to a park and watch a story. We want to be part of it. And then how that experience could be more interactive and personalized for the guest as well.
Yeah, I think my role really is to be the Marvel partner, right, for Imagineering or for whoever else we're working with. And it kind of really help from the inception of the idea, as we craft that story, break that story together, and then help guide it all the way through to opening day through marketing initiatives and things like that. And so what I do is, you know, we have these summits that we do at Marvel every year, where we all get together, every line of business, and so we know what's happening in games, we know what's happening in comics. I go to several creative retreats with the Marvel Comics folks throughout the year, so I know what's coming up for the next 6 months, year, 18 months in Marvel Comics. And these summits are really helpful because they give us, all of us that are working on Marvel content, give us kind of this foundation of knowing where the brand is heading for at least the next year. And so as we craft our stories in our respective mediums, we are cognizant of what's happening around the Marvel universe. So not that we necessarily are trying to like sink in, and sometimes we are like, oh, that's coming up. Oh, that's exciting. You're going to do that movie? Oh my gosh. Great. Maybe if we did this here, that could help, you know, plant seeds. So that part, that is some of the most fun stuff. So I love sitting in the creative retreats and the summits, just hearing about everything that people are working on around the Marvel Universe.
Dude, no joke. You have the best job on the... Because, you know, Kevin Feige, he's, you know, he leads the Marvels. He's like, wow, that's a cool job. Or Bob Iger leads the theme parks. You literally have your hands in all of the Marvel geeky goodness that's going on in everything. You're my superhero.
Honestly, Lou, I'm nerding out about it as much as you are, because I'm 100% a fanboy, and so yeah, I geek out hearing everything that's going on, and so it is super fun. I wouldn't steer you wrong. There is no better time to be a Marvel fan. There's so much awesome stuff coming. I mean, we've experienced a lot of awesome up to this point, but like where we're going from here on out is just going to be a blast. So in every medium. So read your comics, kids. Play your video games, kids. Watch your movies. Yeah. Go to the theme parks. Like there's so much to do. So many ways to consume and be a Marvel fan. It's just an awesome time.
Yeah, I agree. And we recently went to go see, for the second time so far, the latest Spider-Man film, and went with a bunch of kids, and I went to the comic book store. Nicholas and I go every so often, and I bought him a bunch of comic books because I wanted the movie to sort of be the introduction to the comic books, and hopefully the comic books be the introduction to something, to a much larger world. And to that point, and I'm obviously not going to ask you to speculate on anything other than from a personal level, but you know, I think they're about to put pen to paper as the time of recording on the Fox deal, which now opens up so many more worlds, because I think so many more characters are going to return home where they can't belong. And I know you can't speak to it, but again, from the comic book fan, this has to be exciting, and from a business perspective, almost overwhelming at the same time, because now you have all these new characters going to come back and hopefully interact in these worlds with the characters that we know and love.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been able to fully dive into what that's going to mean for us just yet. because it's not, you know, it's not official. But we're super close from what I understand. So we're all just waiting, you know, just like you guys are, for us to get that green light and we can really start to dive into what that's going to mean for all the different lines of business. But, I mean, we're still, you know, actively creating comics every week based on the X-Men, the Fantastic with Dan Slott's writing the new Fantastic Four book. It's fantastic, no pun intended. Well, kind of pun intended. It's a tremendous book. He did an amazing job on Amazing Spider-Man and now doing a fantastic job on Fantastic Four. See what I did? But yeah, so I mean, and Deadpool, of course, the films have been hysterical. The books are great. Scotty Young is currently writing the Deadpool book and just doing a tremendous job there. So, I mean, we're working with a lot of those characters already in certain mediums. So getting to see what that's going to mean across the board in the next few years is going to be a lot of fun.
As a Spider-Man fan, I just want all the New York. I want to see Spider-Man and Kingpin and Daredevil. I want them to see all, you know, on screen. I want to see Spider-Man and Deadpool hug it out. Do you have a favorite character, just from a personal perspective?
Yeah. My favorite character is actually Frank Castle, Punisher. And I'm not going to lie to you. That has not always been my favorite character. I think, my favorite character kind of changes from time to time. But I think what John Bernthal has done with the Punisher has kind of made him into my current favorite. It's not for the kids, but it is because it is so brutal and violent, but also so brilliantly crafted as a story. In fact, I'm wearing my Punisher shirt.
Oh, right. There you go. Yeah.
I love the character.
Well, you had Fantastic Four on yesterday.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love Tony Stark. Love Iron Man. I've been a fan of his for a long time. And then, I love Star-Lord. And my dark horse favorite is Moon Knight. I really love the character Moon Knight. I think there's a lot of potential for that character too.
And I think to that point, in terms of potential and introducing a character that may not be familiar to the average person, we saw the response here to Captain Marvel and what she is going to represent, not just in terms of who she is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but, and I don't think it matters one way or the other, but she is a strong female character, just not in her symbolic strength as a female lead, but she's a literal strong superhero in terms of her powers, and she's going to be, a game changer for the Marvel world and cinematic universe, especially, I think, for some of the younger female fans as well.
Yeah, we weren't sure how she was going to be, what the reception was going to be to Captain Marvel. I think a lot of people are learning who she is for the first time. And for the longtime fans, they're excited to see her brought to life through Brie Larson. And we were able to debut her, you know, quote unquote Parks version here on the Disney Cruise Line this week. And so when she showed up in the Heroes Unite show and she got the response that she did, and to see the lines for people to go and meet her, really overwhelming, really exciting. Can't wait for the film. Right now there's a great book, by the way, by Margie Stoll, The Life of Captain Marvel, which I strongly recommend you guys check out. Captain Marvel is going to be, it's going to be an exciting year for Captain Marvel, for sure, to see how this all plays out. In the same way we were thinking about Black Panther last year, you know, Black Panther had shown up in Captain America Civil War, had a huge response off of that film. I had read the script for Black Panther, the film. I knew it was awesome. It was one of my favorite scripts I'd ever read. I didn't write Black Panther. I knew that movie was going to be awesome. I had no idea it was going to become the cultural milestone that it did. And so I think we all have fingers crossed, high hopes for Marvel Studios' Captain Marvel film. But yeah, I mean, seeing her this week on the ship and seeing the response has been just a lot of fun, very gratifying.
And she was the real life version of her. Looks like she stepped off the screen, as most of the characters. But I watched the same way I watched new Marvel fans in the theaters at Black Panther. I think we're going to see that same thing in terms of young girls coming in costume because they want to be. Because now this is the person that they can not just relate to, but this is the person that they want to be able to dress up and go to the movies as.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's another great animated series/film that we have out right now called Marvel Rising, In fact, I saw a couple of girls dressed up as Squirrel Girl.
I know. I couldn't believe it.
And I looked at my wife and I'm like, what world are we in? Like, how are we here where that little girl can go with mom and dad and buy a Squirrel Girl costume? And that's a thing that exists. Like, this is the time. Like, it's so great. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's a great time for girls and boys of all ages to get into Marvel. I think there's a lot of up-and-coming characters. Captain Marvel's obviously one of them. Squirrel Girl, Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, America Chavez. There's, you know, some really great characters that are on the rise, no pun intended, from Marvel. So, you know, a lot of great... I mean, and how about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with...
Stop.
With Ghost Spider and Miles Morales. I mean, what an amazing achievement that film was. And, you know, bringing broader awareness to Miles Morales and what a great character he is. So it's just fun, man. This is cool stuff.
It is. Like you said, it is an amazing time to be a Spider-Man fan. Look, Into the Spider-Verse, I think, is, when I use words like groundbreaking, it is not just in terms of the storytelling, but the visuals. That, to me, was the first true comic book movie, because it looked like the pages, the little Ben Ray dots and the bleeds. Uh-huh. I'm like, this is it's spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, you took the words out of my head, out of my mouth. It is a comic book brought to life. And you know when they had me, Lou? It's when I saw the Comics Code Authority stamp yes. at the top of that. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. Yep. I'm 100%. I'm with you. It was such a love letter to Spider-Man comics and film and even games. I mean, even the suit from the Spider-Man game makes an appearance. I mean, just, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Spectacular, sensational, all the things.
All it is. And, yeah. And so you talking about tributes, I'm going to quickly go back, because you said something yesterday during your presentation, which, and I'm not saying it because you're sitting here, but Nicholas and I said the same thing, like, was a highlight of the cruise, because I love your story and your passion and the way you tell it, and you can see it comes from love. And I love the fact that you opened it up talking about and showing something for Stan Lee. And you said something about him that I said after his passing on the live show, that he is an American icon. And I think as time goes on, now I know you're going to agree with me, but I think history is going to look back on him alongside names like Hitchcock and Spielberg and Roddenberry and Lucas and, dare I say, even Walt Disney. And I mean that, you know, as the greatest possible tribute to Stan and what he did. We would not be here in literally on the ship at Marvel DC and the MCU 10 years without what he did.
Yeah, I mean, last year we did a birthday celebration in L.A. It was hosted by Chris Hardwick for Stan. And Todd McFarlane, famous, you know, Spider-Man artist, creator of Spawn, was there. And Todd is one of my all-time favorites. I mean, I grew up in, you know, in the 80s and 90s and reading Todd McFarlane's take on Spider-Man. So he was there and he talked about Stan. He said any creator is lucky if they're able to create one thing that becomes iconic and outlives them as a person and as a creation. And Stan created not just one, but hundreds of iconic characters, if not even thousands of iconic characters that, I mean, are now seen in all different types of mediums of storytelling. What a tremendous achievement. And yeah, I think, you know, all the comparisons that you made there, George Lucas, Steve Jobs, Walt Disney, I think, you know, I know I'm biased, but I 100% put Stan in that same Mount Rushmore of creators that just helped define popular culture.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, and we keep saying about it being an exciting time, I'm always excited for what the future is going to hold. The futures that we as Disney and Marvel enthusiasts don't know. Obviously, you know a lot more than we do, so you must really, like, your brains must be falling out of your head. But I'm, if past performance in terms of what we have seen on screen and in the parks as any indicator, I think the next few years are going to be a revolutionary time for longtime comic book fans, as well as this whole new generation, young and old, of comic book and comic book movie enthusiasts as well.
I hope so. I hope so. Because, I mean, it's a we're blessed to have this, to carry this torch now for Stan. You know, I was fortunate enough to get to meet him and interact with him on a number of occasions, and he was each and every time exactly what you'd want him to be. He was Stan Lee, the Stan Lee that we see on screen, the Stan Lee that we've seen at conventions. He was that guy. And
I've never heard or seen anybody say anything bad other than that about him.
Yeah, he was so true to what you want, and you know, self-effacing all the time. He was the best, and you know, we're certainly sad that he's gone, because we just don't have him with us anymore. But what an amazing life that he led, 95 years old, and to do the things that he did. I mean, tremendous. I think we all now carry that torch, you know, in our respective divisions, and you know, me, you know, working with all these great people that work on themed entertainment, and the theme parks and things like that. It's a tremendous torch to carry, but we are so excited about what we're working on, and hopefully gonna deliver on the characters in completely new ways.
Yeah, man, I am super excited. Very quickly, from a fan perspective only, favorite Marvel film.
My favorite Marvel film is kind of an unconventional choice. Captain America: The First Avenger.
I'm with you.
I think that film, I mean, I mentioned The Rocketeer early on. I'm a sucker for 1940s kind of World War II era films. I love that aesthetic. I love the music. I love everything about Star Spangled Man. The way they made that costume make sense in the context of the world, I just thought was so brilliant. Hayley Atwell was a revelation in that film. You know, Chris Evans showing up, you know, we had only known him as Johnny Storm, and now he suddenly becomes Steve Rogers, becomes Captain America in front of our eyes. And that score is still my favorite score of all the Marvel Studios films. It's so heroic and aspirational and all those things. So, yeah. Captain America: The First.
Now I see why you're like, hey, make sure you go see the USO show at Fathoms, because it did. It played, and it was, again, it was that era music with the performers, and then the surprise at the end. Is there a character that, and this is not meant to ask if you know anything, but is there a personal character that you'd love to see on screen that we've never seen on screen before?
I mentioned Moon Knight. You know, I mentioned Moon Knight before. I think there's such a depth to that character, and dealing with mental illness and things like that, and I think could be explored in a really unique way. He's a really unique character in that he has multiple personalities and things like that. So I think he's darker, he's a little violent. You know, I know people have speculated where he might show up, but I, you know, in one form or another, I'd love to see Moon Knight brought to life.
Well, let me say, your story, look, I'm a sucker for origin stories. That's when you said Captain America: First Avenger, like, I'm with you. I love origin stories. I love your origin story, like you did. You were the kid with crayons. You were a wee young podcaster, right? We didn't even mention, like, right? You went from podcaster to creative director of Marvel themed. It's been years. Like, how many years since you guys did the podcast?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Josh Shipley and I, we did the Josh and Kroz show for, you know, while we were at Imagineering. Yeah. And we were both trying to kind of find our footing there. And so if you, I don't know if those episodes are, I think
they're out there. Yeah, they're
still, are they still out there? Okay.
On YouTube, I think. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Josh was good about putting them on YouTube and things like that. But yeah, I mean, we were just rambling and talking about nonsense most of the time, things that were going on. So if you want a sneak peek behind the curtains of what I was thinking about at my early days in Imagineering, that's a good place to check it out.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, I cannot tell you how much my son Nicholas is here with us to appreciate what you and the entire team over at Marvel has done in the parks, here at sea. The merchandise, the movies, the PS4 game is awesome. I agree with you. And obviously for what's to come in the future. So on behalf of everybody who is listening, like, we sincerely appreciate you and everything you guys do.
Well, thank you. And, you know, and right back at you. You know, I love what you do, and I listen to your show all the time, and it's always fun to catch up with you at these various events. I was thrilled to see that you were going to be here on the ship. So it's always great chatting with you, man.
Thanks, brother.
It is a marvelous time to be a Marvel fan.
We did it.
It's time for our Walt Disney World Trivia Question of the Week, where I invite you to test your knowledge of Walt Disney World's history, or I want to see how well you pay attention to the details and what you see, or hear, or maybe even taste. And if you think you know the answer, you can enter via our online form for a chance to win a Disney prize package. Of course, before we get to this week's question, we're going to go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So on the last show, we were looking back at 2018, and I said, speaking of looking back and reminiscing, we were talking about the Adventurers Club and the Kungaloosh, a very important phrase at that location when it was in Pleasure Island. Now, it's a dessert, it's also a drink from what I understand, and I simply asked you where you could find the Kungaloosh dessert, not the drink, and order and eat it. I want to thank the hundreds, probably more than 1,000 of you, I think, entered last week, got this one correct, and knew that you could find it over at the Skipper Canteen in Adventureland in Magic Kingdom, which we reviewed back on show 433. It's been way too long. The menu's been changed. I need to go back and do it again for research purposes only. It's for you, not for me. I'm a giver. What can I say? Anyway, the Kungaloosh there is an African-inspired chocolate cake with caramelized bananas. It's fruit, so it's healthy, and there's also cashew caramel ice cream topped with coffee dust. It's cashews, they're nuts, they're healthy too. It's about $6. It sounds delicious. I'm starving. I need to go back and check it out again. Anyway, I took, I'm always hungry, who am I kidding? I took all of the correct entries, randomly selected one. I can't even speak, I'm so hungry. And again, last week you were playing for all of my digital products. That includes my 102 Ways to Save Money for and at Walt Disney World book, all 7 of my virtual audio walking tours of the park where I take you through the Magic Kingdom, land by land. Each tour is over an hour each. Tomorrowland's even longer, talking to you about the history and the stories and the details, all with the ambient sounds of the parks behind you. All of those audio tours and the book are still on sale for just $10 each. You can go to www.radio.com and get them there. You can go to Amazon. You can go to iTunes. But I'm also going to send the winner a new WW Radio vinyl sticker. You can put it on your car, your laptop, your wall, your mirror, your forehead, anywhere. A pop socket. And just for fun, I'm also going to send a t-shirt as well. And last week's winner, randomly selected, is Jack Larkin. So, Jack, congratulations. Use the online form, which means I have your shipping address. I will get your prize package out to you right away. If you played last week and didn't win, don't sweat it, because your next chance, this is the easiest chance you have to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Not-So-Trivial Challenge. So I am in a marvelous mood. This is not the first nor the last time you'll hear me make Marvel puns as we get ready to review our Marvel Day at Sea, probably in the next week or so. So I want to have a Marvel question for you, but more importantly, I want to keep it simple. I want to give you the easiest possible chance to win. Even if you haven't seen all of the films over the past decade in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, even if you have never picked up or read a comic book or even bought one for your kids or your husband or your wife or whoever, because this week's trivia question isn't a trivia question at all. I just want to know and hear from you and give you a chance to win anyway. So your question this week, which is trivial but not a trivia question, is this. If you could be one Marvel superhero, it doesn't have to be from any of the films, right? You want to get geeky and pull out some guy from the comics in the 60s, or Squirrel Girl, or Frogman, or Howard the Duck. Those are actually all real superheroes, by the way. Or Adam Warlock, or Beta Ray Bill, or the Orb, or She-Hulk, or Shang-Chi, or Cosmo. Have at it. If you could be any one Marvel superhero, who would it be? But we're going to do something different this week. In order to enter, you do not have to use the online form at www.com. Instead, all I need to do are two things. One, go like the WW Radio page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/WW Radio. Boom. That's easy. If you're already liked it, don't sweat it. Second, just go to the WW Radio Box People group. That's www.radio.com/community. Again, that's where the conversation happens. And I'll post this question there. All you need to do is reply to the post right there in the group. Next week, I'll randomly select one person who commented from those that replied to that post. And what are you going to win? If I had somebody to tell you, I would tell you, but I don't, so it's just going to be me. I'm going to send you the books and the audio tours and the stickers and all that kind of stuff, but I also brought back some special stuff only from our Marvel Day at Sea cruise. I'm not going to tell you exactly what I'm going to put in your little prize package, well, except for one thing. They had the coolest thing there. You'll hear me talk about it on the review show, but they had these little light-up Thor Mjolnir Hammer ice cube things for your drink or your desk, which is where mine sit. I bought a whole bunch of them just so I can give them away, and that's what part of this week's prize package is going to include. So you have until Sunday, January 27th at 11:59 p.m. to go to www.radio.com/community. Look for the thread there in the group, and you got to obviously be part of the group. Find the thread there asking you to tell me if you could be one Marvel superhero, who would it be? There's no right answer, no wrong answer. I'm just going to randomly select one comment, and I will send you your prize package out. And by the way, if you like this question, want to tell your friends, again, please help spread the word. Share it out with them as well. Tag them in the comments, even better. So good luck. Not that luck is really needed, but well, I guess it does because I'm going to randomly select it. But so good luck and have fun. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you so very much for taking the time to tune in this and every week. I sincerely appreciate you. I want to thank my friend Brian Crosby from Marvel for joining me this week. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with him. We could have just chatted for hours. If you did, I think you're going to love something else I have for you. Brian gave me permission to video record his Meet the Marvel Masters presentation from Marvel Day at Sea. I'm going to post the entire presentation both on Facebook as well as YouTube. You can find it at wdwradio.com/community. That's our Box People group. And our YouTube channel at youtube.com/wdwradio. If you enjoy it, and I hope that you do, all I ask is that you please help spread the word. Share that with others that would enjoy Brian's presentation from Marvel Day at Sea. Also, because I loved it so very much, you'll hear just how much on the review show, and I think that you will too, I recorded and already uploaded the Marvel Heroes Unite Deck 9 stage show, the show that ends off the Marvel Day at Sea. It is phenomenal. If you are a Marvel fan or want to be one, you have to see it. I will link in the show notes over at wwradio.com where you can find it, but it's in the Facebook group, it's on the Facebook page, and it's on our YouTube channel. The Marvel Heroes Unite show in full HD, plenty of characters, tons of surprises. You do not want to miss it. Don't forget to be part of the community and conversation. Join the group on Facebook at wwradio.com/community. Also, huge thanks once again for all the love and the friendship and the help and the support to everybody who is part of the WW Radio Nation family. I love being able to say thank you and give back to you each and every month. I want to thank some recent and longtime members of the Nation family, including Caroline Conahan, Noemi Fixmer, Jeremy Imwald, David Harrell, Christine Morrison, Michael Jane Roy, Benjamin Bobier, Ronald Webstadt, Jason, last name omitted, he's like Cher, and Catherine Michalski. I sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. And if you want to find out how you can not only help the show, and being part of the Nation helps the show so very much, but you'll also find out how you can get exclusive rewards every month, including scavenger hunts. We have a private Facebook group, Magic Band covers, logo gear. You also get early access to special events, monthly video group calls, and lots more. Again, visit wwradio.com/support. And don't forget that a portion of the proceeds of your contribution go to our Dream Team project to benefit the Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. You know the show is by, for, and with you. I would love to hear from you. If you have a question you want me to answer on the show, you can email me, lou@wwradio.com. Be heard on the air. Call the voicemail at 407-900-9391 with a question, a comment, or just a hello from the parks. I'd also love to hear from you and connect with you and share with you on social. I am at Lou Mangiello on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. It's also my personal profile on Facebook. Again, don't forget to join the community and like the WDW Radio Box People group at wwradio.com/community. And as much as I love connecting with you and hearing from you, nothing beats a handshake and a hug. I want to thank again everybody who came out to our January Meet of the Month over Marathon Weekend. A special huge congratulations to anybody and everybody who lined up, volunteered, cheered, walked, wogged, jogged, or was just there in spirit over Marathon Weekend. I am so incredibly proud of you, especially everybody who is part of the WW Radio Running Team family. If you want to find out how you can join, be part of the fun and the family and the food, go to WDW Run. Special kudos and thanks and gratitude to our Make-A-Wish of America family. Our Dream Team project benefits the Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. Everything we do contributes to that, and we have raised more than $250,000 for the Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. That is all because of your love and generosity and support. And this weekend, once again, over Marathon Weekend, we had the privilege of of meeting one of the children and families that you helped make happen. And it's incredibly moving and wonderful and rewarding to be able to see how what you and what we do together benefits a child and their family. To find out more, visit dreamteamproject.org. Our next meet of the month in Walt Disney World will likely be over Princess Marathon Weekend. That's February 23rd or 24th. Stay tuned to the events page over at wwradio.com/community. You can also find out about other upcoming events. We have two spots left officially for our trip to Japan, our Adventures by Disney to Japan this October, our cruise from New Orleans on the Disney Wonder. Oh yeah, I can't wait for that. In February 2019, we have other events we are going to announce very, very soon as well. Also stay tuned as I'll be announcing some other meetups, not just in Walt Disney World, but on the road as I travel to speak, including San Diego this coming March at Social Media Marketing World. But visit loumangiello.com to also find out how I might be able to help you, whether it's by coming to speak to your business, your conference, or your school, or working with you one-on-one or in small groups. I'm about to launch another weekly mastermind group in evenings every week. Find out more, visit loumangiello.com. There you'll also find out about my Momentum Weekend Workshop and Mastermind September 28th and 29th in Walt Disney World. Whether you are an entrepreneur, solopreneur, have an idea, have a blog, or just want to find out how you can turn what you love into what you do, our weekend workshop might just be the thing. And oh, by the way, it's also during Food and Wine Festival because, hi. Thanks, as always, to Becky Menken and really her entire team over at mousefantravel.com. It's my official and recommended provider. It's who I use. It's who I trust. And it's why I am so comfortable and confident recommending to you. Whether you're going to any Disney destination or anywhere in the world, Becky and her team of agents are going to give you incredible service, all available discounts. They go the extra mile for you. And the hallmark of what they do is the level of personal and personalized service just for you. Visit them over at mousefantravel.com. Go to celebrationspress.com, subscribe and order back issues of Celebrations magazine. And as always, my friend, and you are my friend, whether we have met yet or not, and I hope we do get to meet in person because truly nothing beats a handshake, a hug. All I ask is that if you like the show, please help spread the word. Let others know about it. That's how our community and our family grows and grows the right way. And if you like this week's show or any past show, do me a favor, share it over on Twitter or Facebook or in your favorite Facebook group. Please rate and review the show over on iTunes. It's incredibly helpful. It takes like 30 seconds. Thanks to you. We have over 2,000 five-star reviews. I want to thank some recent reviewers like Jelly with lots of different E's who says, Lou and his friends are travel companions. Lou doesn't know it, but he's my most frequent passenger. Well, I know now. I listen to Lou as I drive to school to keep my anxiety at bay. I also listen to Lou as I drive to my boyfriend's house. I can fit in an episode with a trip there and back. It's so enjoyable to feel the magic as I'm counting down to my next visit. Thanks, Lou, for bringing me back to my home away from home on all my drives. Ellie, thank you. I hope to meet you on one of your upcoming visits. Ben P18 from the United Kingdom says it's a wonderful podcast. I'm now going to read this in my mind with a British accent. I'm a former and hopefully future Walt Disney World cast member and absolutely love the WDW Radio podcast. My favorite with you episodes are the top 10s with Tim and listener emails with Becky. I would definitely consider myself an expert in the small details of the Florida parks. However, I'm always learning something new through listening to Lou. I listen to the podcast on my way to work each week and always brightens my day. Thanks, Lou, and keep up the great work. And that's from Ben in the United Kingdom. Karen SG says, bringing the magic wherever you may be. My family and I have been listening to the podcast for several years. Lou has so much knowledge about Disney, but as important, his podcasts are interesting, compelling, and fun. Big letters. From trivia to top tens and all sorts of reviews, mostly dining, Lou's podcasts make you feel like you're listening to a friend. Yar. His Facebook page carries through that spirit of community as well. It's by far my favorite of all the Disney podcasts I listen to and the only one I listen to regularly. And Abazaba, that's an awesome name, says one of my favorite hours-ish every week. I eagerly await the notifications that Lou has uploaded a new podcast. I've been listening for about 6 years now. Wow, that's a lot of Lou. I love your passion for food, Lou, as this is also one of my favorite things about visiting Disney. Given how expensive things are, it's important to have accurate expectations when heading into a restaurant, and Lou never disappoints in providing a food lover's view of dining experiences at Disney. Thanks for providing a little bit of Disney magic for us every week. And M. Desi says, it's just like being at Disney. Lou does an incredible job making his show informative and fun. His podcast has gotten me through some really gloomy times. Oh, one more. C.P. Murphy says, it's my favorite. I love the podcast. I always feel like a little bit of Disney magic is brought into my car when I listen to it. Keep it up. C.P. Murphy, I will. M. Desi, Abazaba, Abazaba, whatever. Karen, Ben, and Ellie, thank you all so very much. If you want to review the show, please go to iTunes, search for WW Radio, or just go to www.radio.com/iTunes. Finally, most importantly, thank you. I love and appreciate you. You, whether you know it or not, inspire me every single week. This past weekend, even more so. I was so inspired by the runners, by our Make-A-Wish child, all the families. And that, maybe that's my question for you this week, right? I want you to think about who inspires you the most, right? And that answer, there's no right or wrong answer. It's personal and it's unique to you. And maybe it's going to help you understand what it is about that person that inspires you and what qualities they have that you also want to strive for. I'm going to post this question actually on my Facebook at facebook.com/Lou Mangiello. I would love to hear your answer. Once you get it, I'll post it early this week. Thank you. I love you. I sincerely, sincerely appreciate you. And if there's ever anything I can do to show my thanks, please let me know. I hope that this is your best week ever. And until next time, see ya.
Hey, Lou, this is the Richardson family.
Veronica, Ashton, and Brooke.
Hey, we just got back from our vacation to Disney World, our latest one. This has been our 7th trip. And this is the first year after I found the Lou Mangiello WDW radio broadcast. So we did a lot of new things that we'd never done before, even after 7 trips, like the Tiki Room, American Adventure, Journey into Imagination, Eat Popcorn, had a Dole Whip, all those things that Lou recommends you do, and it made the trip even better. So I want to thank you for your podcast and that I discovered about this time last year after our last trip. And I want to thank you personally for what you did for my family while we were there. So you're a great guy. It's a great broadcast, great podcast. So keep it going and keep moving forward. Thanks.
Hey, Lou, this is Jim Smith calling from Hanover, Mass. Hey, I'm just calling. I just listened to your wrap-up show from 2018, the Best Of Show. And I just wanted to say, so I joined the Box group back in, maybe it's late November, early December. I've been listening to the podcast for several years. I just joined the Box group. And I've really been enjoying some of the interactions that I've been having with some of the members. It's just such a group full of welcoming positivity and folks that share the interests that I do and that we all do. So just wanted to let you know I've been having a lot of fun with that. And I also wanted to mention, so like over the years, I listen to your podcast. I love it. And then, you know, there's not another one for a week or so. So here and there I dabble and I look and I find other podcasts because I want to get, you know, just some more information about Disney. I just want to listen to more of it. And I've tried a few others and, you know, they tend to all go for like the morning radio show vibe and it's okay. They're entertaining enough. But when I listen to your podcast, I feel like I'm riding to work with a friend, or if I take you with me when I go for a run, I feel like I'm going for a run with a friend. You know, I feel that about you. I feel that about your guests when you have Becky or when you have Tim Foster on. It's different. It's better. It's more enjoyable. It's more familiar. And I just enjoy the vibe that you bring and the positive attitude that you bring to the experience. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. And thank you to all the folks in the Box group who I've had some real meaningful interactions with so far. I don't live too close to Disney, so I don't get there too often, but I can be there in spirit a lot more now than I have been before. So I thank you for that, and I thank all the folks in the Box group that I've had some good, meaningful interactions with. Appreciate it all, and I will continue to listen, continue to read, continue to post, and continue to be a part of this awesome group. So thank you all. Bye-bye.
Hey, Lou Mangiello, it's Christine Morrison from Flowertown, PA.
And Chase Morrison, her son, from Flowertown, PA.
I'm listening to the latest podcast and cracking up with my daughter, who we're talking about the Latrobe, Pennsylvania meet, and we were the ones that drove from Philadelphia in a Fiat, and we almost ran out of gas, and then there were bees in the car. And then my little Fiat could not make it up the hills in Latrobe. I have never driven such hills in my life. But it was a great trip. We had so much fun meeting you in Latrobe. It was well worth it, and we had a bunch of laughs. My favorite movie of 2018 was Infinity War. I loved it. I just watched it again the other night. So many laughs, so many tears. Really looking forward to Captain Marvel. I'm also looking forward to the streaming service. We just, as of today, canceled our cable and just going to Wi-Fi, and we're going to be streaming everything. So I'm really looking forward to that because my son has been working his way through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he's almost done. It's a great feat. I'm really proud of him for doing that. I'm loving your recap show. I'm not quite done with it, but getting late, and also I wanted to thank you that this year also for me I started my own business thanks to my family, and you listening to your podcast really inspired me to go ahead and make the leap, and it's doing very well. I actually spoke to you a little bit about it in Latrobe very briefly, but it's going well, almost more than I can handle, but not quite enough to quit my day job. So I'm working really, really hard. And every time I think it's going to be impossible, I just keep thinking of Walt and his quote, keep moving forward. And that's what I am trying to do. So thanks to you. Started my own business. And this is a long message, so I'm going to go ahead and hang up. Everybody have a great week and make somebody smile. Say goodbye, Chase.
Goodbye. I'll talk to you on Fortnite. Fortnite.
Oh, Fortnite, please. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Hello, Lou Mangiello. It's Darlene Nagy from West Seneca, New York. And I am calling in to say I am doing the single-digit dance of 8 days. We actually got 2 feet of snow last night. So I'm hoping that the snow is over so my flights are fine next week. And you have now, oh, good gracious me, the Japan trip is 266 days away, and the New Orleans sailout is 382 days away. I would love to be in New Orleans at least once to maybe even just see it and experience that city just for 1 or 2 nights. So hopefully I'll be able to drive up there. I'll talk to you real soon. Have a magical day. Love and hugs and stay warm, everyone.
I don't like bullies. I don't care where they're from.
That man is playing Galaga. Thought we wouldn't notice, but we did.
You know, I thought we were having a moment.
I was having 12% of a moment.
There's only one God, man, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
Well, let me know if Real Power wants a magazine or something.
All right, hey. All right, good job, guys. Let's just not come in tomorrow. Let's just take a day.